Talk Shoes.
Recorded live.
Hello, everybody. This is Rick, and this is the Q&A call for the EMS courses as well as the Affair Recovery Library. So let's get on to our questions today. It's the 21st of October, 2013. So first question. My husband is in denial about an emotional affair he's having with his boss for the last 3 years. I've read where the betrayed spouse cannot convince him or even rationally have a conversation about it because when it comes to the affair, he is not thinking rationally. So I silently sit by while he is continuing the emails, tries to delete very personal ones, texting. He tries to erase it every night, and running around with her during the workday. He recently said he would resume counseling, but I feel very stuck and find myself asking God, how long must I wait? How do you handle the big elephant in the room in this holding pattern? He wants me to stop accusing him, which I call confronting him in love, and wants to continue our platonic relationship so he can shower all of his attention on her. You know, with those types of behaviors, and again, I only know what you're saying here, so I want to be very careful about giving advice, but I guess a part of me would wonder, if this is all going on, why you're waiting, or what is your fear of taking action? You know, how do you handle the big elephant in the living room? You just say, there's a big elephant in the living room. This is not optional for me. This is not something I choose. I have other choices besides this. And if this is what you want, that's okay. I also have other things, but there's something terribly inappropriate here. And if you're not willing to deal with this, then you need to move out. I mean, at some level, you need to be able to set a boundary for yourself to protect you. I always say, if I've got my foot out in the middle of an aisle and somebody steps on it, and I tell them to stop stepping on my foot, and they even deny that they're stepping on my foot, and they continue to step on it, eventually I've got to sit there and say, look, I'm moving my foot just because I don't want to be stepped on. And apparently, if he believes this isn't a problem, then it is a problem for you. He doesn't have to agree with you that it's a problem or not. And he's got to make a decision about what he really wants in life, because it is unfaithfulness. If he would be willing to read maybe something on emotional affairs, I know that we've got many things on the website, that might be helpful. But again, giving that sort of attention to somebody, if that's what's really going on, is going to be it sure sounds appropriate. Now, in terms of having a rational conversation, sometimes if you can get before a counselor, one of the things you want to do is ask the opposite question of what you're thinking of. In other words, I would actually begin by asking him the question of explaining why this isn't inappropriate and why he would want to hide anything. Remind him, if you have not done the EMSO line, the Emergency Marital Seminar online, or even the weekend, remind him that infidelity is the keeping of secrets, and that deleting text, deleting emails, anything like that is still keeping secrets. And at one level, he's got to be able to have an intimate relationship with you, which may mean, you know, being open and honest with you at the very least and not hiding things from you. Hopefully, as you go forward, you know, he'll do something. If he hasn't, if you have not taken something like EMS Weekend or EMSO, if he'll agree with that, then at least it would be something to help him move out of denial about what this is. There's nothing like having a peer group of others talking to you and looking at the situation, and others who've been in this place who say, well, it sure was an emotional affair when I was doing it. I don't know what would be different about yours, but helping him hear somebody besides you is probably going to be really important. But one last thing you might want to consider, since this is with his boss, I would want to know whether or not he is stuck in a sense of feels blackmailed and unable to back off this relationship. Not sure that that's the case. And I'd also want to know whether or not this is being reciprocated or if it's just his own fantasy. But that would be up to your therapist. So I'm very glad he's going to see a therapist. But again, I think a group would be useful. So doing something like EMSO or EMS weekend would be helpful for him to gain perspective. Next question. Rick, I tried to go back and see where the change in my husband's behavior happened, like you suggested. When he became more defensive and less sympathetic to me was right after he asked me about a job he thought about applying for back in July. I knew this was a very sensitive subject because in EMSO, he admitted he was resentful towards me because it seemed like I questioned everything he did and that I did not understand how important it was to him that he had a job where he made enough money to support our family and felt appreciated. Therefore, I tried a moment and phrase it where it was not critical or accusing and said, I don't understand why you would apply for a job that is opposite of everything you're praying for. The job is 2 hours one way from home, 12-hour days on weekends. He would not be able to attend church and would be away from our children when they are out of school. He immediately got angry, and it seems as if he has not stopped since. He said he does not feel supported from me and that I want a henpecked, browbeaten husband who sits at home all the time under my thumb so I can keep an eye on him. That's not true. However, there is a history of moving from job to job, looking for that something and never finding it, and also a history of saying one thing and then doing the opposite with finances. Yes, I admitted to him I was anxious about the hours, no church, which also includes the men's prayer group he had been attending, although he stopped doing this back in July, and that it was really about what would we do to continue to work on our recovery and prevent relapse. He got the job and started today, and we had a huge argument yesterday about it. He thinks I don't want him to do what he wants, and I'm hurt that he's defensive and angry and no longer has any empathy for me. I realize we're both selfish. We both want what we want and aren't getting it. I'm scared I have more panic moments when I feel like where I feel like I did last year when I kept thinking that we were communicating, but he kept denying it, and really they were still going on. I feel like I'm losing control over my thoughts, crying a lot, losing sleep again, and worrying about relapse. When I try to tell them this, he shuts down and it goes south pretty quickly. I can tell he is offended that I don't trust him any more than I do, and I hear that, I hear that it's never enough a lot. In my opinion, he thinks a job will be the answer to all the problems, even though the 7 he has had in our marriage have never done it before. The old pattern of behavior is coming back, and I'm scared. I really don't know how much more I can take. I love him, and I want this marriage. And he says the same thing, but his actions and his behaviors say something different. I'm so very confused. I also find myself becoming mean with my words, looking for the bad guy, and end up telling him how his actions have hurt me. So it's not pretty, and I don't like what's happening. What are your thoughts? So one piece of feedback at the very beginning here, when you ask him about the job, you said, I don't understand why you would apply for a job that is opposite of everything you're praying for. So if that's literally the statement you used, that might not have been, that would probably still come across somewhat as confusing, or not confusing, but accusatory. And probably being confused is better than the words, I don't understand. Something simply, I'm confused, but I'm sure there's a good reason. I mean, always give the other person the benefit of a doubt. And, or you can say, I'm concerned, but, you know, I still trust that you're going to do the right thing. It's almost like how you present it to someone is really important. I think that you both have a mutual goal, which is, as you said, we both want this marriage and we both want to be satisfied. And probably both of you want to feel safe. And saying to him, look, I know that we both want the same things here. We're not on a different page. And it's how do we both feel comfortable? I mean, you want to feel respected and accepted by me and loved by me, and I want to feel loved and cared for by you. I mean, I think we're both looking for that. All I'm saying is how can we talk about it in a way where we can both get what we so desperately want? Because the second he becomes defensive or you get mean, the relationship really isn't safe any longer. And so just backing up and trying to have a dialogue about it is going to be, I think, very critical. Something you might want to consider is reading a book called Crucial Conversations, and it may give you some ideas about how to talk with him about this. I would hope so, because I do know that if you can just begin to have, I think, some conversations about all of this, you know, where we're talking about our mutual goals and what we both really want, then at least it can be something that is going to be civil. At this point, too, it sounds to me as if his pride and needing to care for the family is there. So one of the other things you want to do, instead of just saying something like, I don't understand, you know, why you would apply for a job that's the opposite, but I would actually start it off with what's the person's best argument before you ever start the conversation. In other words, I would say one of the things I've always appreciated about you is how hard you've worked. I mean, you've gone through 7 jobs trying to support our family. I think it's amazing, and I know now all you're really trying to do is take care of me, and you must feel terribly unappreciated that I would, you know, not see it the same way. You know, at the same time, I guess I'm confused as to how we can both feel cared for and safe in this relationship, and can we at least talk about how to help me feel safe here? Beyond that, one of the things you may find is that he's going to make mistakes. And time and time again, I see people like your husband, and I'm not saying this is going to be a situation, but who believe they're going to be able to handle it, that it's all going to be okay, it'll all work out, because they've minimized the magnitude of the cycle or their issue. And just says, I think we're all guilty of doing that in life. And if that happens, it won't be long till he goes back into similar patterns. And hopefully you'll be able to get beyond the betrayal and see that. Maintaining a focus on things that are healthy for the two of you is critical. Be sure to spend time in the relationship doing things besides talking about this. Try to find time for the two of you to go out. I know just listening to this right now, you may go, well, with this new job, there is no time. Well, then you try to make time to go there where you can go out with him. But focus on what's healthy, and the two of you identify. What are the healthy things we need to be doing in our relationship, and how do we incorporate those things into our life? And literally, that effort will at least be putting some sort of positive into the relationship, and the more you can invest and have positive times together, the more invested each of you will feel, and in the long run, it'll be the burgeoning weight of that investment, of that what you see as good about us, that will help create the impetus for future change. Be sure to let him know on a regular basis what you're appreciating about him, and keep doing the EMS, beyond the EMS calls, or the, Married for Life calls. And I think you'll find that if you can just be patient, most of this thing will probably work out. Remember, this is a marathon, not a sprint. And again, I'm hoping the two of you will just be able to have some conversations that will allow you to move forward. Last question for today. When you had your relapse, was the healing process for Stephanie as hard or as long the first time? Why or why not? If a spouse relapsed, does the amount of time he spends back in active addiction indicate whether or not he or she really wants or is capable of recovery? A week, a month of relapse behavior seems a lot more acceptable compared to a year or more not confessing compared to getting caught. So, the first question, when I relapsed 5 years into my own recovery, was it for her as hard as the first time? Why or why not? And I would say it was not as hard the first as it was the first time by any means. I use the analogy of climbing a rope in a gym that, you've got to expend X amount of energy if you want to climb a rope to reach, the ceiling in the gym during your PE class. If you get halfway up and fall back down, you have to work just as hard to get back to the halfway point and on up to the top. To me, recovery isn't like that at all. It's more like a maze. It's not like I have to go vertical climbing a rope. I know the steps to get to where I was in the maze to begin with. All I have to do is just follow what I already know and get back there. It's not I don't expend nearly as much energy because I already know the answers. I just have to begin to put it back into practice and get back on track. My problem and my relapse had been I had started trying to manage things again rather than surrendering. And it was finally getting back to acceptance of who I am and surrendering that ultimately, and letting go of control, surrendering control, that I think characterized that second time around. It happened very quickly. I knew what I needed to be doing. Again, my focus wasn't on even trying to save the marriage. It was, I just know how I have to live. And I got back to that. I didn't want to lose the marriage by any means. But when Stephanie saw my heart and the work I was beginning to do and that I was back in acceptance, it felt to me like we got back on track in relatively short time. So I know it wasn't nearly as painful for her because we'd gone far enough that we both knew answers that we didn't even know the first time. We both believed so many lies, I think, the first time around. Ultimately, it may have shaken who she thought I was momentarily, but as time went on, she also knew that, she knows me, and she knows that's not me, that's the addict in me. And I think just watching me start taking responsibility again, not blaming her, those things really helped us move quickly. Second, if 40% of the addict is always trying, if the spouse, if a spouse relapses, does the amount of time they spend back in the active addiction indicate whether or not he or she wants to or is capable of recovery? A week or a month of relapse seems a lot more than acceptable than a year or confessing and getting caught. So again, I don't know. In recovery work, in my mind, it takes what it takes. I think the problem is probably larger for the betrayed spouse than for the person in the addiction. You have to get back to bottom where you finally recognize that you don't control this thing. And so often, as DeClemente's work shows, people relapse because they're still trying to manage and control. They still think they can control. They still think they've changed. Until they get back to that place, in relapse where they recognize they really have never done what it's going to take until they get to the place where they're willing to move to a whole nother level of acceptance, they're stuck. And, you know, sometimes it'll take, it's just going to take what it takes. But for the hurt spouse, betrayed spouse, if they've, you know, it may be harder to get over a week or a month than it is to get over 2 or 3 years of relapse where you didn't know and you felt so thoroughly deceived, because then you go back to feeling like a fool and, you know, is this person ever going to be truthful? And it raises a whole lot of questions. In terms of being caught or turning themselves in, really what's important is more of the heart attitude. I like the story of David after his affair with Bathsheba. I mean, that guy was caught. And Nathan pointed it right out to him. And he had literally to, I think his heart was very soft. And I think he got back on the horse. I think there's a great example in the book of Acts. Well, maybe not the book of Acts, maybe Galatians, where Peter actually has kind of relapsed into kind of his Jewish ways. And Paul then confronts him. He didn't see it. Somebody had to point it out to him. And when he saw it, he immediately was repentant and flipped back. So whether or not someone turns himself in or not, I don't know. It just seems to me how they respond, whether they come forward on their own, is really the important piece. I know people who have turned themselves in and they've had a horrible attitude and felt entitled because they turned themselves in. So their heart wasn't in the right place there either. So look at hearts and see how a person's heart is doing rather than the circumstances that bring things about. While that may provide some information, how they respond once they're in the light and once they begin to gain perspective of it, when it's out of the darkness, is going to be, I think, a better determinant. Last question. Denial and self-awareness. What are some ways for recovering sex addicts to fight their own struggles with denial and self-deception? If 40% of an addict is always trying to self-sabotage to get back to the addiction, how can we really be safe? The only way that I know to deal with denial and self-awareness is by continuing to work program. If you know that you know that you know you're an addict, you never assume that you can trust you. I know that there's a part of me that I don't, you know, it is set on something other than what my heart is. I know it's not my core self. If it gets activated, if I allow myself to begin thinking certain ways, expose myself to certain things, certainly I can begin to feel passions or desires that are really am not interested in. And once that's there, it's crafty and cunning. That part of me will try desperately to get me to go places I don't want to go. To avoid that, I stay in groups with other people. I know that they will call me. We talk about how we're thinking and what we're struggling with, and we're, you know, brutally honest. I mean, there's a rigorous honesty that has to be there. But you also have to have a group of safe people to talk to. And I don't think mates are really great accountability partners. I think there have to be other people that you're constantly in community with. And finally, where you're working with others, the giving back piece, helping others coming along, giving out a helping hand, that is huge in terms of avoiding relapse. Because as you listen to others at initial stages, you're always evaluating yourself, and just the process of helping, to me, gets you recentered and gets you out of yourself, which then decreases, I think, the amount of self-deception that's even possible, because now you're just thinking of others. And it takes a self-centeredness. It takes moving and being concerned only about oneself and your happiness for that self-sabotage to begin to work. So again, giving a helping hand and helping others is the other way to help with self-sabotage. That being said, it seems like that's all of our questions today. I want to thank everybody for dialing in, and I look forward to talking to you guys next week. To healing.